Hello and welcome to Geeky Brummy Podcast. We're on year 8, episode 8, and we're here outside the Mockingbird Cinema for the Birmingham Anime Film Festival 2024. We'll be having a quick chat about some of the films that are coming up and just our general thoughts about anime and, of course, our one geek thing. So join us after the credits. Right, so here we are, once again, outside of the lovely Mockingbird Cinema down in Digbeth, Birmingham, and we're here for the 2024 version of the Anime Film Festival, organised by Ryan Parrish, he's just behind the camera this time.
Yeah. Existence is paid.
So, and it's in collaboration with the Mac and the Mockingbird and Flatpak, I think, when we did The Boy and the Heron. If you'd have watched the last episode, you'd have saw we were live at Botanical Gardens doing The Boy and the Heron. So now we're at the kind of main part of the festival, which is down here at the Mockingbird. So only in a few films so far, but are there any films that you are particularly looking forward to in this season of the festival?
I am looking forward to watching Osamu Tezuka's Metropolis. Looks very interesting, so I'm probably going to be sneaking into that one and enjoying that one. So,
I'm looking forward to Your Name. It's one that I've seen a couple of times before, but it's a really, really beautiful film. There's a few others as well that look very interesting. Penguin Highway looks like great fun.
Yeah,
just because it's penguins.
Yeah.
And for me, I would probably say Neon Genesis Evangelion, The End of Evangelion, the nail-biting conclusion to what is a very, very peculiar but cult classic of a anime series and film series.
Cool. I'm kind of curious about Junkhead, because it's a slightly different film to the rest of the things that are in an anime festival, because it's a stop-motion film. So not something you see very often coming from Japanese studios. It's stop-motion feels more of a kind of European, American kind of thing. So I'm quite interested in seeing what happens with that one. That's over at the MAC. So I thought last year's festival was quite successful. Do you think that anime is still on the rise in terms of the kind of the audience that it's building in the UK? You know, because it seems again that the interest in this year's festival is on the increase, and I think we're doing it now over a series of weekends instead of in a tight period, and it seems still pretty popular. So what are your kind of thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's like the anime market in general is doing incredibly well. Like, I know that sort of manga is typically selling better than a lot of Western comics, we're getting more access to anime because things like Crunchyroll and things like Netflix getting more stuff in their libraries. Just, it's a lot different to like the 90s, where you got to kind of find whatever small supplier was like the one that had like about four copies of it that you know. So I think because of that, it is getting a much bigger audience. And I mean, I work for a site that covers a lot of anime stuff, and it's one of the big things that we cover. So, you know, it's just a big market. So,
yeah, I think Netflix is a big driver for it, because not only are they getting all the Ghibli back catalogue and that sort of thing, but they're also sort of commissioning and pushing a lot of original anime stuff as well. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you watch something on Netflix, you will then get recommended everything that's similar to it. So it's very easy to fall down a big rabbit hole there. And I think that's doing a lot of work in promoting it as an artistic medium.
Yeah, I'd probably say with every new generation as well, it's becoming more and more commonplace. I mean, you had it was obviously quite niche when you had people like children 70s and 80s, but then they passed down to their kids. And I think especially now, with a lot of millennials having kids as well, they're passing down the love, so it just keeps getting more and more prevalent. But then also things like, you know, as people are growing up. They've also got things like Mockingbird Cinema, where you've got your own cinema, so now you can play anime at a cinema, which is fantastic compared to in previous years where it just wasn't really a thing. It wasn't really seen as profitable. So yeah, I'd say with every generation, it's just getting stronger and more prevalent.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, because I'm not quite sure now whether the definition of anime, as I thought of it in the kind of late 80s, is the same as it is now, because you've got a lot of Western studios and other studios across the world. And particularly when we're getting things like Love, Death and Robots and Star Wars Visions and the game, one that's coming up on Amazon, where the influence of anime is influencing studios beyond Japan. Do you think that strictly anime is just content that originates from Japan? Okay. Or does the definition of anime now extend to things that are made in the style of or with the feel of an anime film? Or do you think they are then, there's a definite delineation between that and a Western anime?
So, okay, in Japan, anything animated is anime. That is literally the word they use for, including Western animation that comes over, they call it anime. It is literally just the Japanese word for animation. Obviously, it derives from animation. Obviously, in the West, it typically is referring to Japanese media. I think Netflix loves to use anime to refer to its animated adaptations of things because it's drawing a lot of influence from anime productions, but I don't really classify it as anime. Like, I am very insistent that it's the Tomb Raider animated series that's coming up, or the Castlevania animated series has been really popular. The Scott Pilgrim anime is an anime because it was a Japanese studio. although obviously, you know, scripted by, in the West and stuff, but like it was an actual Japanese production. But I think like it is one of those things where just the aesthetics of certain types of anime have become so well known that like a lot of Western productions are trying to sort of emulate that, especially when it's like, oh, we want to make it adult, because for years Western animation was seen as for kids, whereas like Japanese animation has like covered all ages very openly for decades. So I think that's why, like, oh, we want to make something that looks more mature, we're going to swipe some aesthetics from over there and we're going to like call it anime to try and convince people. But I think in my eyes, unless it's from Japan, you shouldn't really be using the Japanese word. You just call it animation otherwise, you know.
I think I'm definitely on the same page with you in terms of that. What about you and Matt and Sam?
I mean, I would agree. I think, yeah, anime is very much, at least in my mind, it's very much originating from Japan. But I think there's also quite interesting. Would you then... is it okay to say Western anime and have that as its own sort of like subgenre? So it's obviously inspired by original anime, but it's becoming, as you said, it's taking on more a form of like a more mature medium kind of thing.
I do like when they kind of smush words together to make stuff, because like I know for a while like French anime was a big thing because it was like French animation, but it was done very anime style. I think it was things like Totally Spies and stuff like that. Mm. And it, like the term French anime just emerged out of it. And I'm just like, that's fine by me, actually. Mm. It's clear, because it's clear where they're deriving the aesthetics from, but it's making it clear that it is not actually Japanese. It's, you know.
It's a really interesting question, I think, because like you're saying, initially the term was all animation in Japan. But because, like we were saying earlier, it's evolved and it's come to a broader audience. Because I think sort of back in the day, it was very clear, this is anime, because the only stuff that we're seeing that we could call anime is the stuff that's coming out of Japan that is, you know, purist anime kind of thing. Whereas now, it very much, like, because it was, that definition has evolved, I think, and... it's whether you define it as the art style, in which case the Western stuff would be anime, or do you define it as purely the Japanese stuff?
I think this is where it gets interesting, for the simple fact that, like, obviously we have an idea of what the style looks like, but that isn't what all anime looks like. I mean, even things like you know, we've been mentioning about Astro Boy because of having Metropolis on, because it's from the same creator. Astro Boy's got a completely different aesthetic. It's a lot more Disney inspired. It's a lot more sort of, you know, inspired by those old sort of 30s rubber hose kind of cartoons. And it very much has that look of it, but I would still call that anime because it comes from Japan, even though it doesn't have what we'd call an anime aesthetic.
Yeah.
And obviously you brought up things like Junkhead, and we've got Final Fantasy VII Advent Children as well. And these are animations that came from Japan, but they don't have the usual aesthetic because they're in a completely different animation medium, but I'd still classify them as anime because they're animation from Japan.
Yeah, I definitely think it's the Japanese-ness mm-hmm. of it that makes it anime, regardless of the style. Because I think when you start looking at... Because most of the anime I first came across was television shows. So it would have been things like Astro Boy, Battle of the Planets, kind of dub mm-hmm. stuff that I didn't really... It was just a cartoon because they were running it in the same block as they were doing, you know, Top Cat or the Flintstones or whatever it is. So I didn't really kind of cotton on to the fact that this was coming
classic
from a
anime,
different country. But as time goes on and it's become, this is very much a Japanese thing. And often it's more in the plotting and the characterization than the actual animation that makes it anime. I think that is the defining feature for anime for me, is what's it about and how does it work?
Yeah, rather than the actual, it comes from like style, a different cultural background and stuff like that. Even though it is very heavily influenced by Western animation. But I mean, like, the big question I would sort of pose that kind of highlights where I feel about this, would you call Scott Pilgrim a manga? And my answer is a definitive no, absolutely.
It's definitely not, even though it's formatted and done in that. It's influenced by. Yeah. It's the same way DC are now putting out what they're calling their digest editions, which are shrunk down graphic novels.
I love that they're doing that, because it's like, all right, fine, if you're going to buy all the manga, we're going to trick you into buying the superhero comics.
If you've just popped into the shop to buy the latest copy of Heartstopper or whatever it is, here's the Watchmen to go as well. Yeah. I mean, they're not the same. It's a format thing, but it's not mm-hmm. manga, because it is... Yeah. It's just not.
We're just emulating it so we can trick people like who like One Piece into reading Batman.
We want to get into that market rather than the actual kind of thing. They have tried it with a few of their kind of more... young adult titles. DC particularly have done, they've brought in manga artists from Japan to work either on a character or with a American writer to do. They've done it with characters like Raven and Dreamer and stuff as well, and it's been relatively successful. But I think with anime for me, it's definitely that it's Japanese and that's mm-hmm. it's kind of like, you know, French New Wave is not something else. It's definitely its own thing. But if anybody's got any thoughts about kind of, you know, what they define as anime, we'd be quite interested to hear. Is there something out there that you would class as anime that doesn't come from Japan? And the reasons why. We'd be quite interested to find out for people what it is.
And if a Japanese studio released something that looked and was exactly like, say, Frozen, would that still be anime?
Yeah, we would say yes.
Mm. Yeah. Hey, I push for Advent Children in this festival.
True.
Well, hopefully at some point we'll get some more kind of stop motion stuff from Japan, so we get a kind of like Aardman style Final Fantasy, which I would go down for. Because looking at Zelda, some of the recent Zelda games, they've done some that looked almost stop motion, which I would absolutely go a bundle for. But as it's beginning to start to rain here, we're going to cut and we'll be back shortly with our One Geek Thing.
I'm with the amazing Cam, also known as Rude Brown Dude.
Cheers.
You've made this wonderful canvas for a flash year here at Birmingham Anime Film Festival.
Yeah.
Cam, you've just seen Cowboy Bebop. How was it for you as an experience?
It's one of my favourite movies. It's probably one of the movies that got me into anime, one of the shows that got me into anime, one of the soundtracks that got me into anime. So, yeah, a wonderful experience, and thank you very much for having me and for putting it on.
It's all Redline as well yesterday with Never Seen Podcast.
Yep, amazing. Great actually staying for the podcast as well afterwards. It was it was a completely different experience, like the custom artwork. Shout out to Sam, by the way. You know, great work. It's amazing seeing stuff like this in Brum, especially.
Thank you. And what does Birmingham Anime Film Festival to you? Year two. I think it's going successfully, but as an attendee, how do you feel about anime?
I feel like it's super encouraging to see the community show out. obviously, yeah, it's in terms of how it's going, the movies on show, hospitality, everything. It's been an amazing experience so far, and I hope that it carries on through the whole festival. What I would say is, yeah, obviously we get it. There's going to be a few technical errors. The weather can't always be on point as well.
Yeah.
But I want to give a massive shout out to the Geeky Brummie lot, because like seriously, you guys have like people talk about doing things a lot, and you guys have taken the initiative and actually done it and put your foot forward and you know really gave the community something to celebrate and be excited for.
Thank you. Big shout out to our two venues as well, Mockingbird and yep. The Mac as well.
Yeah, big shout out to them as well. Big shout out to Mockingbird for having me, and big shout out to the Mac as well for having the festival on show.
Yeah. Cam, it's been absolutely beautiful. Where can people find your artwork on Instagram?
If you want to read and see what I do, it's at Rude Brown Dude. I'll be here on the 29th. That's it. Yeah. That's a Sunday. So the 29th. And hopefully have a bit of a surprise for people who want to come and visit on the weekend.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
We'll cheers, home. Thank you.
Right, so we're back for our latest One Geek thing. So we'll just go around the table and just find out what it is that's tickling your fancy in the world of geek at the moment. So we're going to start for our returning member, who I didn't introduce back to the podcast because some of you might not remember who he is, but that's Matt. So Matt, what was your One Geek thing?
Yeah, sorry, like Mariah Carey, I defrost once a year and come back for a special. So
not Christmas yet, though. Or is that a Halloween thing?
It's a Halloween thing, yeah. My One Geek thing is watching the Dota TI International 2024. So that concluded just last week, so the end like start of September, and it was won by Team Liquid, so it was a very, very, very good international. Lots of really tight games, really good Dota playing, I'd probably say. But Team Liquid won, it's their second win of the international, and who came second was Gaming Gladiators, and it was a very, very well fought final, because Gaming Gladiators have been runners up several times in several major tournaments and at TI multiple times, so it was kind of bittersweet because Liquid are a fantastic team and they well deserved it, but also part of me wanted to see Gaming Gladiators finally be able to lift the Aegis, which is the trophy. So that was me and a lot of my friends just sat on Twitch last weekend with a couple of beers and just watching international.
What's it actually like to watch? How engaging is it as a spectator sport?
Loads of people ask me that. It's that kind of thing of, I imagine it's how lads would watch football. Same sort of thing. It's that kind of, it's actually quite exciting when you're sitting down, you're watching it, you talk about the plays, the strategies, why they're doing certain things, and then like disseminating different fights, what went wrong, what went right. Item choices, that kind of thing. So it's kind of, it's a similar vibe to any other sport, really. It's just, yeah.
Does it influence your own playing style when you're watching stuff and you go, oh, I've never thought of doing that?
Yeah, in the sense of, as soon as it finishes, I go on Dota and go, yes, I've got this, and then proceed to like feed massively and and do really badly because I think I've watched pros play, so I know what to do now.
I get it because like, obviously, I haven't watched any Dota, but I do occasionally watch the Tekken World Tour stuff. And so obviously, I'm like, oh yeah, that looks easy. Like I could see like him doing all these moves and side steps, and I could do that too. And then I proceed to go online and just like, oh wait, no, never mind.
It's not as easy as it
no.
looks.
Yeah,
the equivalent of a large man sat on his sofa watching football, going, why am I not doing that?
And he can't run like more than 10 minutes.
Yeah, so literally proceeding to troll all of my games because I'm there being like, oh, but it worked for, you know, it worked for this player, but they earn millions of pounds every year playing this game because they're good at it.
Yeah.
So we're going to cross the table now to Sam. Ooh, so, okay. What was your geek thing, Sam?
My geek thing is I've been watching a program on Netflix called Chaos, with a K. Which is a sort of contemporary modern retelling of a few Greek mythology stories. So the ones they sort of focus on mostly are the story of Orpheus and also the Minotaur. But they first of all put them in a very kind of modern context. So Orpheus is supposed to be this sort of incredible love story, but the starting point is actually they're kind of falling out of love, and Orpheus is kind of in denial about that. And then the sort of Minotaur story focuses more on Ariadne than Theseus, who's barely in it at all. But the most fun part of any kind of adaptation of Greek mythology is who they cast for the gods. So this has done that particularly well, I think. So we've got the big one is Jeff Goldblum playing Zeus. He's the one who's sort of plastered all over their advertising. And it's literally just, what if Jeff Goldblum had omnipotent god powers?
Doesn't he? He's just playing. He's playing himself in this show.
Janet McTeer playing Hera, his wife, who's fantastic. Stephen Delane, who is best known as Stannis the Manus from Game of Thrones, is Prometheus, who's sort of got this kind of narrator role, breaks fourth wall a lot. He's also, there's this kind of great running joke where Zeus, even though he's condemned him to be chained to a rock and have his liver pecked out by an eagle every day, Zeus still considers him his best friend and the only person he can really talk to, and will occasionally just snap him over to have a chat with him and then snap him back when he's done without any warning. Naban Rizwan as Dionysus, so brother of Mawan Rizwan. He's brilliant as well. He gets the kind of party side of him down, because Dionysus is a really interesting god, because everyone thinks of him as the god of wine, and your first thought might be the sort of Fantasia style big drunk guy, but he's also the god of things like madness and cross dressing and general revelry, and they do kind of capture all of that quite well, I think, in this. And then we've got Cliff Curtis as Poseidon, who's a New Zealand actor. Basically, whenever you need someone who looks like they're sort of Maori descent and somehow associated with the sea, and you need someone who's younger than Boba Fett, you get Cliff Curtis. But he's perfect for Poseidon. And then my personal favourite is David Thewlis as Hades. And he just perfectly captures the sort of guy's been doing a really, really difficult job for a really long time, and just complete weight of the world on his shoulders. And it's also fun because if anyone's counting, that's the second Greek god that the not remotely godlike looking David Thewlis has played after he was Ares in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
It's a really well thought out retelling. They take sort of modern concepts and see how they would play out in that kind of Greek environment. So there's a character who was an Amazon but identified as a man, and they sort of have a little look at how that would play out in that scenario. So it's really good little program, and I finished it last night, and it's very much lining up a season two, so I want people to watch it so that Netflix renew it, because I know what Netflix is like.
Yeah. Billy Piper's in it as well?
Yes.
Yeah,
she's Cassandra.
You've also got Eddie Izzard as one of the Fates, again, it's just immaculate casting. It's so good. I binge-watched it as well and cannot recommend it enough.
all three Fates are played by non-binary or trans actors, which is quite interesting as well.
How many episodes was that season run for?
Only eight.
So pretty snappy.
Easy to watch.
Hour-long episodes?
I think slightly, more or less an hour, yeah.
I'll just interject for a second, because I'm not sure whether you'll be able to hear over our recording. But we're being joined by a music video recording for local musician. So we might take a break for just a second. So we're back after our brief interlude to continue with our one picks of One Geek Things. So we've had Matt's and Sam's. So now I'm going to throw it to you, Lee. So what's your pick?
I have been playing Astrobot. It is the new PS5 exclusive game. It is a sequel to Astro's Playroom, which is a pack-in tech demo, which has more gameplay in it than any tech demo has any right to do. It's better than any tech demo should be. It's basically like about a little robot. The original game was about a little robot that lives inside your PS5 and goes on little adventures. And just, you know, it's mostly an excuse to sort of show off the features of the controller and show sort of like some of the tech of the console and all this sort of stuff. But even though they'd been tasked with this tech demo, they basically made this just joyful 3D platformer that's like only about 3 hours long or something, but like it was a lot of fun and had all these unique little worlds and unique little ideas. People loved it so much that they were like, all right, we'll make a full game. And that's what Astrobot is. It is like a full thing. And the story of this one is that as Astrobot and his crew of other little robots are flying through space in the spaceship PlayStation 5. It's just a PlayStation 5 flying through space. Some alien appears and like smashes up their ship and causes them to crash land and sends like all the various different parts to different galaxies and all this. And the crew is scattered as well. And so Astrobot lands on this little planet and he has to like set out across the different galaxies to rescue all his friends and retrieve all the parts of the PS5 so he can like go back in on his space adventures and stuff. And his little spaceship that he travels around is the PS5 controller, and you collect all the bots and they climb inside of it, and that's how you get them back to the little hub area where you build the PlayStation 5. And the little bots, a lot of them are references to other games. And it's kind of funny because it came out like the day after I think the guy currently in charge of PlayStation was just like, oh, we don't have a lot of IP. And Astrobot then comes out and is like, no, you do. We have quite a lot of IP. We're just not using any of it because here it all is in tiny little robot form. So you've got like all sorts of different like characters will show up. So you've got like Joel and Ellie from The Last of Us are in there. You've got whole levels dedicated to certain franchises like Uncharted and God of War. So like you'll go into this level and it's Astrobot will take on the form of like Nathan Drake or Kratos and he'll gain like their weapon and the level will play out exactly like one of their games. So for Uncharted it's like you've got this little gun and it's the toy gun from Uncharted 4. It's the one that Nathan Drake has in his attic. So it shoots little pellets around. But it is like very much a cover shooter, so you're running around bits of cover and all the enemies will fire at you and all this sort of stuff. And for God of War you get the axe from the more recent God of War game, so you can throw it and you can, there's like puzzles where you can use the axe to freeze things exactly like in God of War, and they use like music remix from that. But in addition they've got like a lot of sort of more obscure PlayStation stuff is in there. Like you'll get like a lot of the old RPGs like Legend of Dragoon's in there and Wild Arms, that sort of thing, and even like really obscure like PS1 stuff like Devil Dice at one point. Like there's a level where I went into this area and it's just a Devil Dice layout. So there's this old like dice puzzle game on like an isometric view. And I was like, what the hell? You're really referencing this, like of all things. And also like another one I found was like a character from Mototoon Grand Prix, a game whose entire presence in history is, this is what the Gran Turismo guys made before Gran Turismo. And that's the only relevance to anything today that it has. But obviously you've got a lot of third-party stuff in there as well. Like, you'll find, like, Capcom's got so much stuff in there, like Street Fighter and Resident Evil and Monster Hunter are all represented, and there's, like, Solid Snake's in there and stuff like that. But even beyond like referencing all this PlayStation history stuff, it's just such a really fun platformer. It reminds me a lot of Mario Galaxy, as you're kind of going to all these different little planets, and they've all got their own little gimmick. So different levels, you'll have like a dog that's like a jetpack, and he'll sort of strap himself to your back, and you can like do like it, so he'll jet forwards. Or you've got like a monkey with these two big arms that'll slap around, and you can use them to grab things and throw things or climb up things. And it's just like so full of joy and imagination. It's one of those platformers that like as you explore and you sort of get these ideas of like, oh, what if I tried this thing? What if I tried jumping over there? What if I did this? And the game always rewards you for it. Even if it's just like, oh, it just gives you a few coins or like a little effect happens. It's just it wants you to play around with it and it wants you to interact with everything. And it's just like, why isn't Sony making more of this? Like, they've got so much stuff that they can do that I wish they were doing more of this sort of stuff, that rather than like another remaster of Horizon Zero Dawn. But it's just such a joyful experience. It, like, it, a lot of people have described it as being like, this is what Nintendo makes, but Sony have done it. What's going on? Like, so, but yeah, having a lot of fun with it. And it's one of those, like, I rarely replay games, but I did replay that one because it's quite a short experience, but like, it's just so much fun that you can happily just jump back and play the whole thing again. So.
Cool. Is it worth buying a PlayStation 5 4?
I would say so.
Say yes. That's good. Because you'll give me an excuse to get one. I'm going to round up with this segment with another game. Strangely enough, it's another sequel to a game I quite enjoyed. Possibly on Xbox 360, possibly, I think. And it's just ridiculous fun, but it's Space Marine 2. I love the first Space Marine. It was a great game. I don't really play the tabletop version of the game very much, but there's just something being a giant man in a robot suit with big guns shooting. In the first game it was orcs, in this game it's Tyranids, so it's basically alien dinosaurs, and there's millions of them, and it's just more of what the first game give you, and they've taken out a lot of some of the problematic bits. Some bits are still there, but generally it's great fun. The campaign works brilliantly as you work through. You're playing the same characters you were in the first game, even though it's 100 years in the future, because Space Marines live forever. But they also give you some other parts which allow you to play other missions that are happening in other parts of the world while you're playing the main campaign. And they've got an eternal war, which is like it just keeps going, and you have to just murder everything with bolt guns. And it's just nonsense, and it's fun, and I kind of quite like it. And as my Game Pass has expired, I just slapped down the cash to buy it, because I had such a good time with the original game. So if you're just looking for a really great shooter, I would highly recommend Space Marine 2. I think it's on all of the kind of big formats.
Yeah, it's on...
Probably not on Switch.
Yeah, it's just not on Switch.
It's definitely not on Game Boy. or NES. Any legacy formats, you're not going to get it. But if you got a modern console or a PC, yeah, you're all right.
Yeah, PC, PS5, Xbox.
Yeah.
Current one. Whatever the current one is called, I can't remember.
Right, we'll be back in a few seconds just to round up with all of our socials and where you can find us. So we'll be back in a second. Right, and we're back now to just do our wrap-ups about where we can find everybody. At the moment, we can find Ryan Parrish behind the camera, completely devoid of any commentary this episode, but you can find Ryan Parrish at Ryan Parrish on X, Twitter, call it Twitter, because much like Stacey said, everybody, it's no good. Get rid of X, it's all Twitter. But find Ryan Parrish, and you can find him on the Geeky Group website as well. Sam, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at DragonSam89, and on Instagram at SDEdwards89. And I'm also on the Geeky Primary website every Thursday with the film roundup.
Lee?
Okay, you can find me on YouTube at BobBetFerret and on Twitter at TheCheapFerret.
Instagram, matchstick_Matt, and on Twitter as Mr. Matt Lovell.
Okay. Don't forget, Lee also does his games roundups on a Friday. Never publicizes it enough, and also he does all of his stuff for Silicon Era and other great gaming websites. You can find me as Hard Luck Hotel. You look it up, and it's not Count Duckula, it's probably me. And then every Wednesday, I'll be giving you my website with the Comics of the Week roundup, which you should read and go and follow the comics, because it takes me an age to do it all. So make sure you actually pay attention to what I'm doing on those pages. And then you can find everybody every week and every day on the Geeky Brummy website, YouTube, Instagram, or whatever. Go like, subscribe, join, review, do all the things that all of the celebrities are asking you to do, but do it for us, because we're not celebrities and we don't get anything for free. So come and join us in the Geeky Brummy family, and we will see you in our next episode, which will be in a sometime in the future. Yeah, just subscribe. If you subscribe, you'll find out, because you'll get notifications.
Or
so do it.
Come join us in person at Birmingham Anime Film Festival.
Yes.
What here until said. Mid-October.
Yeah. So come along, have fun, and we'll see you soon.
This issue of the Geeky Brummy podcast was recorded live outside the Mockingbird Cinema in Digbeth. It was presented by Keith Bloomfield with Lee Price, Sam Edwards and Matt Lovell, was produced by Ryan Parrish and Viv Parrish, and is a Geeky Brummy production.